on this episode of The Jason Wright Show.
Yeah, I think if you see political leadership in states that say you should be scared and you're all going to die, like the mayor of New York, who's almost on his way out, Bill de Blasio, who's literally mandating that children 5 and above have to be vaccinated before they can go to a restaurant. You have to, a 5-year-old has to show a vax card there. That the population in New York is 1,000 times more scared than, let's say, the state of Florida, where Ron DeSantis is like, we're not locking down. We're going to live our life.
All right, Philip Stutz, dude, thank you so much for being on The Jason Wright Show.
Man, I'm honored to be here. Roll Tide.
Yeah, amen. Roll Tide, baby. And so, well, listen, it's funny because you and I think, have kind of known each other from a peripheral or known about each other for so long because of our background and the political scene and everything. And then now, I can't escape you, dude. You're everywhere. I mean, you're on podcasts, you're on James Altucher, you're on Fox. And I just want to say, from knowing how busy your schedule is and all the things you're doing, I really appreciate you being here.
Oh man, let's dive in. Let's get going. I'm good.
Okay. Here's where I want to start this out is I want to talk about just some data. So and one of the things that's really, really cool about your book, which we will talk about, The Undefeated Marketing System, which, like I showed you earlier, Philip, I mean, there are almost as many tabs as pages in the book for this thing.
I need a screenshot of that to send to my wife that somebody read the book. So that's really good for me. I could use that. So I appreciate that,
Jason. I will hook a brother up, I assure you, no problem. So the thing that you hammer on in the book over and over and over is data. There's so much that data tells us. And so I just had a guy on the podcast as part of my Healthy Gut series, Dr. Marvin Singh. He wrote the book, Rescue Your Health, and he coined the term precisionomics, which is basically go and find the baseline data to figure out where you are, and then you can start getting where you want to go with your health. The cool thing about the Undefeated Marketing System, which is your 5-point marketing system that you've implemented to great success, is so much of it centers around data. So I thought we'd do a couple things. Weave in, if you will, the importance of data, because the cool thing about it, data doesn't care about what's popular. But I want to use these numbers to, I just want to ask you some questions that I know anyone that's out there in the audience is probably wondering, such as, okay, I'm really interested in, with what's going on with COVID, the lockdowns, it looks like we might have lockdowns coming back, and it looks like there's an attempt by public health officials to go back to the well with the Omicron variant to lock things down again. What is your data showing, or have you been able to do a deep dive on, what do Americans think right now? Are they still as afraid? Is it broken out by demographic from parts of the country? Kind of just give us an overview of what the data is telling you about this entire, this stage of the coronavirus era that we're in.
Yeah, I think if you see political leadership in states that say you should be scared and you're all going to die, like the mayor of New York, who's almost on his way out, Bill de Blasio, who's literally mandating that children 5 and above have to be vaccinated before they can go to a restaurant. You have to, a 5-year-old has to show a vax card there. That the population in New York is 1,000 times more scared than, let's say, the state of Florida, where Ron DeSantis is like, we're not locking down. We're going to live our lives, and we're going to have to figure out how to live with us. And so the people of Florida, where I live, it's like, yeah, it's exactly, that's the reality. And you're seeing that in the data as well. In the study we just came out with, so we have put a little background for anybody listening. We, since March of 2020, we've put out over 20 data analysis and survey reports looking at the economy and COVID. And it's just every month it changes drastically and differently. And so business owners have been able to download this report for free, and kind of get ahead of the curve on what's going on in that particular moment with COVID, because obviously we have so many ups and downs. I always say there's no new normal. It's just new. Every month is new. And you can go to my company. It's at winbigmedia.com/COVID and download, you know, all the reports that we've put out. But the bottom line is the one that we most recently put out. I actually have some stats in front of me. I want to pull them up because my brain can't remember everything right now. But here's what I would say to answer your question on where people are. We actually were able to ask, now in our database, we have 240 million American consumers, where we've got 550 million connected devices. We're tracking 10 billion online purchasing decisions every day and a trillion searches. So this is where we're pulling this data from. It's not just out of the sky or Google Analytics or anything like that. So, but the question that we asked was, whose medical opinions do you trust in regard to whether or not you'd be willing to get the vaccine? And politicians, whether, you know, the trust factor. Right now, American politicians of any kind, federal or state or local, they have a 3.3% rate of trust on whether or not someone should get the vaccine. So you're talking 96.7% of Americans are like, they may listen to politicians, but they're not going to trust what they say. They're not going to go get the jab or not get the jab based on what a politician says. The media at large has basically a 95.6% negative approval on whether or not people should get the jab. So when people look at the media, only 4.4% of American consumers right now are watching the media to figure out whether they should get COVID vaccines or not. Fauci's at 33% of the American public, about a third. It makes sense. There's a third of Americans that Fauci is literally a religious god to them. And then there's another 67%. There's probably in that 67%, there's people that probably listen to him sometimes don't. And then there's others that are like, you know, he is not, you know, credible at all. But when you have 67% of the American population that's like, I'm not listening to the number one quote unquote vaccine expert, I think that's problematic for the trust factor that Americans are looking at with us. That doesn't mean they're not scared, Jason. They are scared, mm-hmm. American consumers, but they don't know who to trust.
Yep.
And then the most trusted source on whether to get the vaccine or not is your personal doctor. And that registered at 55%. So 55% of American consumers are saying my number one choice is my personal doctor and whether or not I should get that vaccine. And then I'm looking at some other numbers. Extreme economic anxiety is up 22% from the summer. That is at 60.9% of the American consumers have extreme economic anxiety. And 71.4% of Americans feel that they are struggling right now. And again, you're like, how does that make sense? Everybody I know is like making more money and buying more things and doing stuff. Well, because there are just two different Americas right now, and there's such a class separation that we've never seen. You're seeing this because of inflation. You're seeing this because we pump so much money into the economy. You're seeing this because we lock people down, and it made some people go broke and it made some people go rich. Mm-hmm. And so there's just a lot of different things right now that we're seeing, and it's pretty out of whack.
So, all right. So this is interesting because I know from reading the Undefeated Marketing System, you touched on a couple of things there that seems to be eroding. And just so the listener knows that Philips, WinBig Media firm works with, you know, large global organizations to smaller businesses, but it has its roots in getting candidates elected. So you understand the political waters from a marketing standpoint, taking that human being that wants to be an elected official and getting them elected, marketing them to an electorate. So you said a couple of things there, and you talk about in the book how important trust is. And what I'm seeing, and again, this is not a red-blue thing. This is just me being kind of the novice out here voter watching. You told me the data says we're not trusting the politicians, yet you obviously have a strategy from the Democrat Party for sure that says you must get the jab, you must get the jab, you must get the jab. And it seems that I mean, what are they, what is their strategy? Because it doesn't seem like what they're saying is lining up with that data, but they're just they're going full bore anyway in it. Yeah. So what do you think that is?
Yeah. What is it? Why are they doing it?
What do you think? Like if they're your client, if you go to the DNC, which probably ain't gonna happen, they retain you.
I'd be happy to go over there and tell them what I think.
What do you think is going on internally? What is the strategy there?
Yeah, it's control.
Okay. Okay.
It's trying to scare people into supporting and voting for them.
Okay.
It's trying to, like, listen, why you're in Texas, right? Are you in Texas?
Yep.
Why do we have vaccine mandates, or the federal government's trying to impose vaccine mandates? Why do, if you go travel internationally, you need to have a vax to come back into this country, but you don't need one to cross the border in Texas.
Right.
And we now know that there are up to 20,000 people that have tested positive for COVID for crossing the border, but they're not required to get the vax. Why is that? Well, there's one that's a voter base and there's one that's not. And ultimately, it's just common sense. You can connect the dots. It's not difficult to understand. Why do Gavin Newsom in California, the governor of California, or why does the mayor of San Francisco, that are, again, locking people down and requiring masks everywhere and vaccine cards, why are they going out and having public, going into restaurants and going into nightclubs and dancing all night long, like the mayor of San Francisco was doing recently, mm-hmm. and partying all night long without a mask, and then saying to the constituents that were upset over it, get over it. I'm going to go have fun. There's two sets of rules for people in power. And this is when we've got I don't really care if it's a Republican, Democrat, if there are Republicans doing this right now, I'd be saying the same thing.
Yep.
That you've got to replace that kind of power, because that is scary kind of power. When people think I get to be the ruler and I get to decide it, what it also does, it's going to be a really rough analogy, but it's true. When you have people that scream rape at everything, women that scream rape at everything, and you delegitimize people, women that are actually being raped and traumatized. And when you scream it at everything, and when you scream that everybody is going to die from COVID, even though, we know in the upwards of the 80 percentile of people that have died of COVID have core, one or two comorbidities, meaning that they have elements that of disease that may cause them to die, or they're overweight. I think it was something like 76 or 82% of the people that have passed or have gone into the hospital for COVID are overweight. But we don't talk about this country, how do you get in shape? Yeah. What are the supplements you need to take? Listen, I'm extreme. I'm not saying anybody needs to do what I do, but I take 92 supplements a day. Yeah. I take 92 supplements a day. And a lot of those I've studied to understand, how do I not prevent COVID? I'm going to get it at some point. Everybody's going to get it. Like, that's a fact. Yeah. But what do I need to do to prepare my body for COVID? And so I take 10,000 units of vitamin D every day. I take vitamin C. I take zinc quercetin. I take a lot of zinc. I take a lot of niacin. These are supplements that if your body has them in them and you get exposed to COVID, doesn't mean you're not going to have a rough time, but you're probably not going to the hospital. I also work out 4 days a week. I eat extremely healthy, as much organic as I can. I eat paleo as much as I can. And all of these things I do because, one, my body's my temple, but two, look, there's a secondary effect in this. And that is I'm preparing myself for when I get COVID, that I keep my body safe and that I don't have to go to the hospital. And frankly, I have an obligation to do that. I'm a husband and I am a father and I am looking out for my family. And it's kind of like, the people that are best prepared are the ones that don't have fear.
Right.
That's just a fact. And so what I'm trying to do in my life right now, whether it's trying to be more sustainable, trying to grow my own food and have a freezer full of elk meat that I just shot in Colorado that'll last me for the next year. All of these things make me doesn't, I don't have any fear over anything now. I'm ready. If the grid goes down, I'm ready.
Right.
If, you know, if I get COVID, I'm ready. And by the way, COVID may hit me in the face and who knows, maybe I've got one of those comorbidities that, knocks me out and kills me. I accept that. That's my responsibility. I take that chance. But ultimately, what you're seeing is people that can't fend for themselves versus the people that have been empowered by leadership and politicians across the country to say, go protect your family. You're free to do that. And those are the ones that ultimately that have got to make it through this crazy world to help lead us into the next next generation.
Well, and that's going to be a good lead in because I want to see what the data is showing from the upcoming midterms and then potentially then on to the presidential. But, you know, it's interesting because I'm reminded of what you say in the book that it seems one side is understanding their customer first, not the tactics, which you lay out. There's tactics and there's strategy, right? There's here's how we're going to make your plan work. But then there's also, and you say it in the book so eloquently that you can't get away from the fact that one, as the business owner, you're in the middle of what's going on. So as an elected official, you have to just look in the mirror and go, okay, if I were just out there, I want to be able to live my life. I want to live it as safely as I can. So how can I do that? And it seems like one side of the aisle is getting that. They're going, hey, people want to live their lives. So what can we do to, from a policy standpoint, minimize as much risk as possible and let them live their lives and let them do what they want to do and have that liberty and freedom that they're accustomed to. While another is saying, yeah, that's probably what they want. In fact, that's what I want. And that's in my own time, that's what I'm going to do. But my tactic to solve this problem is different. I'm not going to listen to my customers. And they're going that route. With that as a tee up, tell me kind of what your data is showing you for 2022 and 2024 if things remain anywhere near like what we're seeing right now.
Well, remember this, whether you're listening to this and you're a business owner or you're just kind of curious how politics works. You must be relevant and unique to the customer from their perspective, not yours. That's it on a bumper sticker.
Yeah. It's gold.
They need to see you as unique and relevant, not you running around saying I'm unique and relevant. And so that for me is fundamentally different. As far as 2022, if the elections were held today, it'd be a bloodbath. For Democrats, I mean, an absolute bloodbath. What we're seeing in the data right now is that people want more balance to the government. Right now, you've got, Biden is president in the Democratic Party leading the Senate and leading the House. And what you ultimately see trending, this is over the last, 15, 16 years, is that the American public probably much more prefers to have a Republican Congress and a Democrat president. That doesn't mean it happens every time. It doesn't mean it can't get flipped. Right now, it's just an anomaly. I mean, there was an anomaly in 2016 when Donald Trump came in and we had a Republican House and Senate. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the voters just said, ooh, we need more balance. And we lost that. The Republicans lost that. I work mostly with Republicans. That's why I say we. And so, you're seeing sort of the same thing. It's a flip on that, though. Absolute power is not ultimately, like, they give it a chance, voters do, and ultimately they say that's not really what we want. Mm-hmm. And that's what the trend line's saying. Now I say all that and I tell everybody that asks me what's going to happen in 2022 or 2024, I'll say the same thing. No one really knows. We know what it would happen right now.
Yeah.
But you haven't seen one ad right now.
Yeah.
Wait until you see 6 months worth of ads and how that shapes what happens if something in the with COVID happens that's really bad or something that happens really good. Like, everything can shift on a dime. And so what we're seeing is the incompetence that has come out of the Biden administration to date, whether that would be the Afghanistan pullout, the border issues, the day-to-day not making sense and kind of rambling in speeches. This kind of chaos is going to be projected really hard out of 2022. And again, if the election were today, the Republicans would be massively favored to take over, not only just barely take over Congress and the Senate, but to make huge gains. And also in gains in local elections and governor's elections. And I mean, we're in, I think our company is involved in like 15 different US Senate and governor's races right now. And, you know, those numbers are blowing through the roof, right. But things ebb and flow. There's going to be a point where it looks a lot closer. And then there's going to be a point where it settles on election day. And we'll just have to see where that plays out.
All right. So I want to take it from politics into the corporate world, because when I was reading your book, I also was fascinated by the fact that essentially you said a lot of these, and you use Coca-Cola as kind of the shining example because it's so big and so notable, that a lot of marketing firms, they know they've got a multi-million dollar budget. They kind of want to do the, well, if they're doing it, we have to do it. And there's really not a lot of thought. It's like, take a lot of money and just, here, our product makes your life better. And that's what the sell the day is. But right now, man, I hear, again, actions don't seem to be matching up with what the consumer wants. I see all of these corporations going woke, yet I hear the people that I live around, and granted, I live in a red state, I live in a smaller community, but I think pretty much when I talk to my buddies on the West Coast and the East Coast, they're kind of the same way. I'm a big Peloton guy. So I'm a patron to one of the most woke companies in existence. Right. And I don't want to be lectured to, and I don't think anybody does. I don't really care. So it's weird. It's like, do you have clients when you sit down now, are they even as worried about actually selling their product as they are of making sure they just keep the mob at bay? I mean, I've got to believe that your metrics, as pushed upon you by some of your clients, has had to have changed in recent years, because we've got this whole new thing that we got to change our logos at certain points of the year. We got to have certain themes through the year that we didn't have, where I guess used to it was the holidays. Now it's all these different things that have nothing to do with actually moving product. Are those conversations different with your clients now because of this era of woke?
No, they want the bottom line. I mean, everything's driven, even the woke stuff, it's driven by the bottom line. Like they're worried about selling product. They're worried about selling services. They're worried about, is their SaaS product getting new subscribers?
Yeah.
There is an element in their company that's pushing the woke stuff. And so, you know, I mean, we've looked at this so much in the data. And it's just overwhelming that American consumers just do not, way overwhelming that they don't, it. Listen, even some of the woke people don't want Delta or, you know, some big company to, it's all fake. Right. So, you know, the reason that people in corporate America are pushing woke stuff and, you know, the kind of things you're asking about, it's not for their customer. It's for their employees.
Yeah.
That's where it's coming from. Mm. The employees who don't like their job are going, well, you gotta have this and you gotta have that. And you know, they're the ones pushing for all this. And the corporations are so scared right now to upset the apple cart of their own employees that's why they're caving to this. It's not about the customers. The customers don't give two shits about it. Mm-hmm. It's the employees within that company. And so that's where it's coming from.
And which companies are winning the biggest right now that are managing that balance between, because I got to think right now, a CEO has to be very much like a head NFL coach. There's elements that are, it's very, very personal and important to some employees that are in the organization. Yeah. Others are just kind of caught up in the whirlwind going, you know what, I just want to play football. I just want to, you know, be the CFO or the head of accounting. Which companies are winning at this battle to maintain the balance?
Specifically, I don't know, because I'm just not paying attention. I do know that there's a fundamental principle that's winning, and that's stop apologizing.
Okay.
The companies and the brands that say, oh, you can't cancel me, I'm not apologizing. Mm-hmm. They're the one, it's standing up to the bullies.
Yeah.
And once you stand up to what happens, you know, what were we taught, Jason, growing up? If a bully came in and pushed you around, you popped them in the nose.
Yeah.
Because then they go, I'm not messing with that person again. Mm-hmm. And in the corporate America, people listening right now, there's probably plenty of bosses out there who have been total jerks. But when you stood up to them with the facts or with something they couldn't dispute, they probably stop pushing you around. They try testing you. And that's all the mob's doing is testing. And so when you stand up, and you don't have to stand up and be a jerk about it, but you can stand up and say, hey, this goes against what we believe, and we're not backing down, and we're not apologizing, and just leave it at that. Those are the brands. Those are the companies. Those are the influencers out there that are winning right now more than anybody else. And like, it's the lesson. Stop a fucking apologizing.
Yeah.
Like, stop it. Because the more you do it, there's nothing good that comes out of this. And it's like, you know, just let's just take Britney Spears. So like, this documentary came out on Britney Spears about her conservatorship or whatever. And part of the story that came out was that Justin Timberlake in 2001 was a bad boyfriend.
Right.
He didn't
right.
beat her. He didn't hit her. Yeah. Just a bad boyfriend.
Yeah.
The guy came out and apologized 20 years ago. 20 years ago. But he got 40 years old. He's 20 years old. Why is he apologizing for something he did at 20? Stop this stuff. Like, it makes no sense why people are doing this.
Yeah.
You know, I've made a shit ton of mistakes in my career, and I'm making them every day. And if I make, you know, a mistake that really hurts somebody, I'm going to apologize. But to the woke mob, you just can't. There's no way you can do it. And the people that are standing up, let's just give you an example of a brand. Adam Carolla, right? One, a comedian who I love to death. And I've been on his podcast a couple different times. And he just refuses to back down, and he refuses to apologize. And the guy has probably 10x'd his brand, his company, the businesses that he has within it. He sells tons of products, wines, and you know, all these, you know, shirts and all these different things, and they've just gone through the roof because people want it. Look at Joe Rogan.
Yep.
Joe Rogan is the most influential person in America right now because he just doesn't apologize and stands up to what he believes, and that's the key to the whole thing, in my opinion.
I could not agree more. And Dave Portnoy is a great example of that.
Yeah, Dave Portnoy, great. Yeah, Clay Travis from Outkick, that's another one.
And I think the reason why is because it goes back to what you've talked about in your 5-point marketing system. Is now we know. We can trust them. We may not like what they do. We may not. Yeah. And that's one of the things going way back whenever I was on city council. One of the things that I learned that was my most effective line in a town hall was when someone would ask me a question that I knew they were setting me up because we disagreed. And every politician, their default, at least for me, my visceral default is, constituent, what do you want to hear? I'm right there. Full transparency, because that you want to serve and you want to please them, and you want everybody to be happy, but it's impossible. So what I learned is to fight that and go, I disagree with you, and here's why. And if you stay for the entire town hall, we'll disagree on a few more things, but here's the deal. You'll know where I stand on every issue.
Yeah, right.
Philip, 100% of the time, it worked. We would leave and we'd disagree on that point, but they were like, but I know you're not going to sugarcoat it. All of this, like, again, we really don't know what some of these airlines, soda makers, food companies, we really don't know what their core values are. We just know they're just going with the crowd. But one that says, I'm out, I'm different, I don't agree with that, but come eat my chicken sandwich, we'll go, yeah, all right. I don't like that you didn't jump on the herd, but man, I love your food. I love your music. Yeah. I love your soda. Right. And so I think that goes back to what you have said. I got to believe that right now, with where you are in the world and the business you're in, it's got to be so fascinating because there's so many huge forces battling for attention, for, you know, virtue signaling, all of it. And you've got to be able to cut through that and go, hey, guys, remember, we're selling product here. And you want to have some trust along the way. And if you just follow the herd, people will see through that. And I'm glad to see that is coming through.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so here's another section in using our time wisely that I want to go into. Philip, you have built an incredibly successful company. You took something that, again, you were helping candidates get elected, and now you have a very renowned marketing firm with, I mean, a who's who of clients. And by the way, it was funny because I love James Altucher. I love your work. And so immediately, whenever you were talking about the product that he's a part of, the wrap, whatever it's called.
Bowler wrap. Yeah.
Bowler wrap. I was like, I know what client that is. So tell the listener out there some of the biggest surprises you have had as an entrepreneur and the things that you have learned, like the biggest failure you're willing to talk about to avoid, to help them navigate that minefield? Because one of the things I always say on this show whenever we start talking entrepreneurship is a lot of people think they want to be an entrepreneur, but the idea of it is much better than the reality of it. It's kind of like the time I thought that it would be a good idea for me to ride a Harley, to have a Harley Davidson motorcycle. And then once I rode one, I realized the idea was much better than the reality. So talk to the listener out there that's going, man, I would love to start my own firm and end up as amazing as Win Big Media. Talk about your entrepreneurial journey a little bit.
Well, I was a wannapreneur from 2005 to the end of 2014. I was basically a one-man consultant to nonprofits and politicians. I like to tell people I was at the time I was this entrepreneur, and but I wasn't. I honestly, until January 2015, and we're talking now 7 years ago, I didn't even know how to read a P&L, and I didn't know how to read a balance sheet. I'm dead serious. I didn't even know what they were. I honestly had my accountant would send something at the end of the year, and I'd be like, I don't even know what this is, and I just brush it off. I didn't even know what my numbers were.
Right.
And so it's interesting, Jason. I think I'm 47, and when you're in the age range of about 37 to 43, your whole career, your whole life, you feel like you're kind of going up a roller coaster, like going uphill on a roller coaster, right? Mm-hmm. And then you hit 37, 43, something in that range. All of a sudden you get to the top of that hill and that roller coaster, and you look down and you go, oh shit, it's downhill from here, 'cause I'm halfway done. And this is all there is. Yeah. And this is why you see a lot of divorces happen around this time. You see a lot of people that cheat on their spouses. You see a lot of people go buy Harley Davidsons. You just see these different things. We all do it. This is not a judgment. Like, we all are going through this. I've seen my wife go through this. She's 41 now. I went through this. Every friend I know goes through it in some form. They all do different behaviors. But you don't just keep going up the roller coaster like you think you are when you're 32 or you're 22 or whatever. Like, everything's uphill from here.
Yeah.
You know, it's going down. And so you have to make a decision. What am I? Who am I? And I think people that are stuck in jobs that they don't want to be in, that's where they really struggle. Right. Yep.
Agreed.
And so for me, I was just a wannapreneur. But there was a limitation when I'm a one-man shop. There was a limitation on how much I can earn, because there's only one dancing bear, and I'm the dancing bear. And that was it. Everybody wanted me and my time. And ultimately, I remember in like 2013, I had like 7 clients. I was making really good money. And then, not because I did anything, although, I mean, with other clients, I've made mistakes in the past. I'm not saying that. But in this instance, I had like 7 clients, and 3 or 4 of them literally within 1 month dropped off. I didn't do anything wrong or nefarious or anything like that. They just, like, the nonprofits ran out of money, or the politician decided not to run for office or something like that. Right. And I went from having an epic year to literally being in an oh shit moment. And I went, hold on, I need, you know, it's kind of like investing and having a diverse portfolio. I didn't have a diverse portfolio. I was all invested into one stock, me. And if it didn't work, if there was a downturn, which there will be, there always will be, then I'm in deep trouble at some point. And that, again, we talk about protecting and working towards, you know, being the leader of your family or whatever. That's what I was like, shit, I'm putting myself in a really bad position. And I had a newborn at the time and all that stuff. So I just decided I was going to change and flip. And there's a much longer story to that. But that led me to kind of starting Go Big Media, which is the political ad agency I have, the marketing agent, political ad agency, marketing agency I have. And so we've grown that, you know, I think we're approaching $60 million in revenue in the last 7 years. And It's just grown like crazy. It's grown every year over year. It's grown every single year more than it was the previous year. Mm-hmm. And then about halfway through, I decided, well, I think businesses can apply this. Except when we tried to put it all under one brand, we had a lot of business owners be like, hey, I went to your website and there's a bunch of politicians on there. We're like, oh yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So we created Win Big Media. And Win Big Media is our corporate marketing arm. And here's where I'm going to come into the big failure. We, the first year was a massive struggle. And my advice to people on this is, I thought I could just snap my fingers and create $1 million business. It isn't. There is no get rich quick pill. I've tried everything. I've tried the get rich. And I just told you a story about how Go Big went from zero to 60 million in 7 years. That is true. But trust me, there was nothing easy. The first year was not 60 million. The first year was like 1.2. Yeah. And the next year was like 2.3. And then it just started snowballing after that. But it was grinding. It was, you know, 100-hour weeks for 4 or 5 years. It was nothing that came easy. I grinded like crazy. And then I foolishly believed that I could snap my fingers and actually start another company, Win Big Media, and it would be easy. And it has not been easy. It has been one of the hardest things I ever. The first year we rolled out Win Big Media, the first year I was clucking my feathers and pounding my chest and telling everybody I'm a badass MF-er and all that stuff. And we did $88,000 in business. In 1 year, the company, the marketing agency, did $88,000 in business. Now, I will say we're a multi-million dollar company now.
Yeah.
But I had to learn the hard way that there is no get rich quick pill. There's only get rich the right way pill. And it's what I try to teach businesses about how to market their own business. You got to have the long game, not the short game. And anybody out there selling you on the short game is lying.
Yeah.
Just like people told me that I could, you know, 100x my business and sell it in 18 months. Oh my God, I'm such an idiot for thinking that that was actually an option.
Right.
It's not. And to build a company the right way. And then the most recent failure was at the end of last year, we decided we were going to 5X the business in 2021. And we brought in, I don't have any debt in my companies, Jason. I've literally reinvested every dollar. I'm the investor in the company. Mm-hmm. I've reinvested every profitable dollar we've had back into the company. That's one of the reasons we've grown. It's one of the reasons we don't have debt. We don't have outside investors. It's a reason that, but that's the way, that's my model. That's what I like to do. And so last year we had a great year at Win Big Media. And I said, we're going for the big time now. And I didn't have the right fundamental foundation in place. I didn't have the right culture in place. I didn't have the right operations teams in place that could manage our teams within the company.
Yeah.
And within about 3 months of 2021, I lost 7 out of 12 employees.
Wow.
Because we tried to ramp up too much without the foundation in place.
Yeah.
I had to pay a dumb tax, which I've now estimated would be roughly around $2 million, not just in lost money, but lost time.
Yeah.
It totally paused all the growth we needed to do. So I had to learn that lesson. And then the lesson was I had to get an operations person in that could take my wild and crazy vision and execute on it.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that person. I didn't have a complimentary player in the way I needed it. And so we, in May of 2021, after my book came out, we actually brought that person in, and this guy is just a rock star. And he not only cares about how we grow the business, he cares deeply about the people working in the business.
Yep.
And he cares about how do we grow the culture? How do we take care of our team? How do we make sure that if we take care of them, they take care of our clients? I've never felt so excited in my life for where our company is now, but man, did I have to pay a dumb tax there. And the other thing, lastly, I'll say this. For every business out there, there is a fundamental shift going on in the economy. Not only do we see this in the data, but we are seeing it everywhere. If you have multiple people working for you, they don't want to work for your crappy company anymore.
Yep.
They don't want to work 40, 45, 50 hours a week. And know that half of those hours are to the stuff they don't want to do. And they're going to leave you. And this is what happened to me. I tried to jump too fast without the right foundation in place. And when they had to sacrifice, they weren't willing to do it, the people that were with us. And they all left. And I went, holy crap. I can't just force my growth mindset onto other people. I have to serve them first, and then they'll buy into the vision of what I'm trying to build.
Yeah.
And I got it all wrong. And the labor market's so insane right now. People, you know, we advertised recently for an account rep for our clients. We needed to hire a new one. And this is in September of 2021. We typically get 35, 50 resumes. We get two. And one of the people that replied was making $65,000 a year and said he needed to make $130,000 a year if we were to hire him. And this is what the labor market is right now. Wow. Right. And so I looked at my operation, my new operations guy who's killing it. And I said, there's an issue going on. You got to keep your A player employees. You got to figure out a way to serve them. But we went from a culture in our company of we are in this together. We're a community. We hang out. We're in the office together. We go to happy hour together. We serve each other. You may not agree with all the policies of the politicians or the clients and the corporate side that we believe that they, that, you know, the products they sell, but we believe in each other and we're going to go help these people regardless. And everybody bought into it. It was so crazy. It was amazing. And in the last 12 months, that's gone. That culture is over because people are not together anymore.
Yeah.
And what we found is the purpose of the employee market right now is about the individual. It is about how are you serving their purpose, not how are we serving a community's purpose.
Mm.
And that has fundamentally changed everything. And again, I had to learn a very hard lesson. And so I am the most aggressive right now on hiring and serving my team members within my company, because there's, if I get this right, I'm going to dominate the market in the next 5 to 10 years because nobody else is going to get this right. And so I have brought in culture consultants and not woo woo kind of stuff, like people that have worked in Fortune 200 companies that are now coming in and interviewing all of our employees and asking them, what do they want in their life? What do they want out of their job? What's the most important thing? What if you knew Win Big Media or Go Big Media did these five things would make you never want to leave their company? I want to know that. Yeah. I want to know how I can serve them better. And in the past, so many business owners, they go, hey, you're going to be managed to what I want as a boss.
Yep. Yep.
And it's just not that world anymore. And I had to pay that price, but I paid it probably before 99.9% of the job force or the labor market or the economy found out about it. And now I'm just pivoting like crazy right now.
Well, in what you said that, okay, so I do a lot of that coaching and consulting. I do I'll take a founder transitioning to second generation and help do that.
Yeah.
But I have a founder that I work with, and to his credit, one of the greatest entrepreneurs I've ever worked with. I was a speaker at a trade association, and he was the outgoing chairman. He said, I want you to come talk to my company. I want you to visit with me about my company. And that was his focus. He said, I'm losing too many of these young professionals to big companies. I want to know what they need. What is their purpose? Mm-hmm. So now I've set up a culture there where we're going to have one-on-one communication with and having to retrain me. It's a very blue collar professional service is forestry, man. And forestry is like, so you've got degree holding, but blue collar working individuals, but they want to know that they're a part of a purpose. And so it's kind of a double, it's good and bad. One, what I'm seeing, Philip, I don't know if you've noticed this, the employees of today, money's not everything like it was when you and I were coming up. We were all going to, you know, go 10X a company, have a big exit or do something that made us feel really important. And now it's like, no, I want my life to have purpose. So I do admire that, but you better understand what that purpose is or they will not be with you for very long. They will just, they'll just go chase the money for a while until somebody says, hey, come here and be a part of something that you can buy into. Also, something that you said is so critical that I want this audience to take away from that incredible entrepreneurs, which you could replace Joseph Campbell's hero's journey with entrepreneur's journey, because they're very similar in so many ways. When you hit that 40 mark, dude, and you made me think about it in a way that I never have before. When I turned 40, 43-ish, I always tell people my I don't give a shit meter was pegged. All of a sudden, I didn't care about what people thought as much. And I think you just answered the question why. It's because your 20s and 30s, you're faking it till you make it, and you're always trying to look more important than you are because you just think that's what feeds you. when you're 40 and you do, like you said, you look over the cliff and you see it goes downhill from there, you go, it doesn't matter anymore. I have to face reality and who I am, whether it's I'm an entrepreneur or I'm not. If I'm not, I got to admit, I'm not. Go get a good job. I can provide for my family. I can exercise my talents there. If I am an entrepreneur, go all in, take the lumps and work hard. And I think that's something that I would really like to stress or just reiterate that you said to this audience is, if you're in that place, knowing and admitting and accepting who you are, brother, that's why I re-released my first book. That's why I'm doing this podcast. I don't want to be in Congress. I don't want to do that. I thought I did. I want to make connections and help people and inspire people and hear stories and put them out there. And so to me, that's what's most important. Now, I know, unless you've got something to add to that, I know you've got a hard stop, but I got to ask you this. It's the most important question I'm going to ask you now I am a tuition paying fan of Alabama, but I was an Alabama fan before my daughter went there.
Sure.
Are we going to win the national championship? My brother.
We'll see.
Come on. I know you're probably.
Yeah. I mean, I think the odds are that we're going to win it, but it's like the worst team we've had since 2008. So if Alabama pulls it off, this is the greatest coaching job Nick Saban's ever done. Now let me say this. I do want to add one thing to what you were saying.
Okay.
If you've got people out there that are, you know, high level employees or CEOs or C-suite guys or women, right? I heard a quote from none other than Kirby Smart, the coach of Georgia. He said this last week before Alabama beat their ass in college football, but he said this and I went, oh my God, this is my quote for 2022. Pressure is a privilege. And A players love pressure. And we look at it as a privilege to being in the game. Mm. And so many people, I can tell you, the people that quit, they're the ones that can't take the pressure. They don't see it as a privilege. I see it, and I haven't always seen it, but I do now. That pressure, there are only a few people that can handle that kind of pressure. Yeah. So it should be a privilege to have that kind of pressure on your shoulders, to run a business, to manage people, to try to serve others. Pressure is a privilege. And I think if I could take, you know, if anybody could take anything away from this interview, that's the way you got to look at it.
I love that, brother. I love that. Well, all right. So tell everybody where they can find you. And look, man, I know some of the C-suite listeners of this program that I know could use some of your services. So where can people find you? A plug for the book. I brought your book up many times. Look, folks, you see all these tabs. I'm telling you, it's a phenomenal read. I hope that this gets picked up by, you know, I got my MBA at SMU and this should have been a part of the marketing curriculum, dude. Thanks. Serious. It's practical. It's real life. It's boots on the ground. So where can people find out about you, Philip?
Yeah. The book is not a textbook. It's a storytelling book. Yep. There's a lot of stories in it. And if you like stories, you're going to be entertained by it and you're going to learn a lot. You can go to philipstutz.com. I'm sure you'll have my name spelling in the show notes. If you have a company and you want to understand your customers better, we actually, you know, like I talked about with our data, we do this for businesses where we look at their customers and can tell you everything you've ever wanted to know about them. And you can go to philipstutz.com/insights and we do a free data assessment of your, you know, what you have and how our data could help you impact them and really start marketing to what they want, not what you want to market to. And we just take a money ball approach to marketing. There's nothing that we sit around a table and brainstorm on. Everything we do is rooted in what the data tells us. And so you can go there. And then I've got a podcast now called the Undefeated Marketing Podcast. Fantastic. Just had Peter Diamandis on, who is business partners with Elon Musk. We've had some James Altucher on. We've had Cal Fussman, who is one of he's interviewed every celebrity and world leader in the world. And
big questions with Cal Fussman.
That's right. I mean, we've had a lot of great, really interesting guests and we'll continue to do that. We use it as a platform to give people practical marketing tips that they can implement without hiring anybody. And so that's it.
Awesome. Well, Philip, thank you so much for sharing the most valuable non-renewable resource any of us have, which is your time. I'm grateful. From the Jason Wright Show audience, we all thank you. And brother, I'm going to hit stop recording and say goodbye to you properly. Well, that does it for this episode of The Jason Wright Show. Thank you so much for listening. This has been a Texas Titans Media production. Hey, don't forget to go over to the YouTube channel and check out what's going on over there. And please go to jasonwrightnow.com and sign up for the Vitruvian Letter. I'm Jason Wright, and I'm out.